1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand a sign, and Greeks look for wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles, but to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. Brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holiness and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord. And so it was with me, brothers and sisters. When I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or human wisdom, as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I came to you in weakness and with great fear and trembling. My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power. I want you to try and think of something that you can remember what life was like before that thing. Maybe it was, I can vaguely remember what it was like before TikTok was a thing. And life is just totally transformed now. Well, it's great to have Paul and Laura Reeson and their son Declan with us today. And maybe for Paul it's like, he can remember back to a time before there was Taylor Swift. And now that there is Taylor Swift, life is just totally different. For some of us, and we'll keep going, right? For some of us, we can remember back to the time before there was a thing called Facebook. Or even before there was a thing called the internet. Now, I just want you to take it back in your mind, back to something, whatever old you are, whatever category it is, go back to something that you can't even begin to imagine what your life is like now without that thing. Because your life once happened without the internet. Your life once happened without Taylor Swift. Your life once happened without TikTok or Clubhouse or whatever the latest thing is on the internet. And that's what I want us to try and do, is to take our lives back before we knew all about Jesus' death and resurrection. Because we're Christians and it's good that it's part of who we are, it's part of what we know and all those sorts of things. But what happens is that we just become so familiar with them that we in some ways forget the radical change that it brought. Back in the day, if you wanted to travel overseas, what you had to do is you had to go down to some travel agent and you had to flick through brochures and you had to try and figure out and ask them what plane flights were available and all these sorts of things. And now you just whip out your phone, you use your frequent flyer points and you're off on a trip without having... Well, we can't at the moment, overseas. But no, booking overseas travel or even travel in Australia is totally transformed, isn't it? And here Paul is writing to the Corinthians, and what he's trying to do is to help them get back to that rawness, the newness of the message that he spoke to them. You see, I think in many ways our culture and our society is a bit like Corinth, the letter to the church in Corinth that Paul was writing, you see, because Corinth was a city that had been destroyed by the Romans in 146 BC and then rebuilt by the Romans, and so it was like a Roman city in Greek territory. And so it had Roman power and Greek philosophy. It was a trading centre, so it was a cosmopolitan sort of place. And so people would come and they'd be interested in the latest philosophy or what the latest orator would bring. And that's a bit like us, isn't it? You know, we are, if you like, we live in the powerful West. We have resources and an economy and technology, and we have access to the brightest minds and the greatest orators of this age. We're all on our phone. We can tap into them at a moment's notice. We've got all this human-generated wisdom that we can access. And so Paul came to Corinth, a place where they were sure of their status and power, were sure of their intellect and thinking and wisdom. And he brings to them a message that he described as foolishness. I mean, we it's so hard for us to, I mean, we just love the cross, right? It's so important, right? It's so significant for us. But we're going to try and work hard to sort of unwind and step back before all that and to understand that the cross was a thing of shame. It was a thing of it was a thing of curse. It was not a thing to be proud of. And here Paul comes into this city and he proclaims this message of someone who got killed on a cross in a rebellious city on the eastern end of the Roman Empire. And to the mighty, powerful Roman culture, that seemed ridiculous. And to the Jewish people that were in Corinth, and the Jewish people who were looking for a powerful saviour, that seemed ridiculous too. Scandalous, in fact. The Messiah could never be one that gets killed. The Messiah is one that's supposed to defeat the enemies. And as for wisdom, what do you get out of someone that's been crucified like a rebel or a criminal? Where's the wisdom in that? And yet Paul has wandered into Corinth and has proclaimed this message. And he summarizes it later on in the letter, in this letter to the Corinthians too, where he says, you know, according to the scriptures, Jesus was crucified. On the third day he rose again and he appeared to many people. He just told this crazy story. And it did in Corinth what it's been doing for the centuries ever since. It changed people's lives. It upended people's thinking. It reshaped their understanding of power and wisdom. You see, through the scriptures, it's pretty common that humans tend to think we can do this without God. You know, back in the Garden of Eden, yeah, we'll eat the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We can do this without God. At the Tower of Babel, we can build a temple and reach the skies. We can do this without God. And in this passage, Paul refers to two passages in the Old Testament prophets, one from Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 29 and the other from Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 9. And certainly the one in Isaiah 29, the passage around it, a few verses after the verses that are actually quoted, says, basically, you thought you could do your own wisdom and you could do your own power. You see, all through the scriptures, that identifies that, yes, we can develop our own wisdom and our own power without God's help. And And God has to break through that misconception. And so God sends his Son to teach and preach and heal, present himself as king, and be crucified. That's crazy. That's weird. That messes with our conceptual framework. That messes with our thinking. If we think about this story, it should begin to shake our intellectual confidence to the core. It should be something that begins to shake us about our power and our technology and our mastery of the world around us in significant ways. Because God needs to get us who are confident in our own wisdom and confident in our own abilities and confident in our own resources to realize that they're not enough. And this apparently foolish story of an unknown person being crucified in a minor city of the Roman Empire 2,000 years ago is the way that God chooses to upend our thinking. Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. A stumbling block to Jews, a scandal to Jews, in other words, and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. Now, some of us might be thinking, "Well, yeah, I'm not wise. Although I live in a well-educated culture, I'm not terribly wise. And although I live in the Western world and there's lots of power and resources, I don't have many power and resources. I know where I am at the bottom of the rung." And you think, "Well, I don't have much wisdom." And Paul says, God chose the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of this world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are. Because we all need to get to that space where you might already be feeling that I don't have any wisdom, I don't have any power, I don't have any riches, I don't have any resources. Who would choose me? And God says, I choose you. I think, I'm not worth it, there's nothing good about me. And God says, I choose you. For those of us who are so full of ourselves, we need to be unfull of ourselves so that we can also hear God say to us, actually, you're not really full of wisdom and you're not really full of power in terms of the scheme of God. And when you come to that realization, then you can also hear me say, I choose you. And so Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 2, for I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I want to encourage you this Easter season, in these next 5 weeks leading up to Easter on the 4th of April, I want to encourage you to see if you can know nothing while I was, to follow Paul's example, to know nothing rather than Jesus Christ and him crucified. Through Mark, we're going to be unpacking a bit about what we think the cross actually means. Because the cross has been a thing that, and how it works and what God's achieved through it has been a thing that humans have wrestled with for the last 2,000 years. And sometimes there's some misconceptions about that. But the good thing is you don't need to have all of the theology be able to articulate it well. All you need to be able to do is trust that what Jesus did. You may need a medical procedure, and you may not understand how the procedure goes, but you just need to trust the doctors that they will do it. Now, for some of us, we like to know it all, and we need to understand it all, and if we do understand it, maybe we can then cooperate better with the treatment regime. But what you don't have to have a doctor's degree to get the benefits of what the doctor can bring you. And so it doesn't matter, we think, I don't think theologically, that's okay. You can still fill your heart and mind with Jesus Christ and his crucifixion, and it will do stuff in your life, even if you don't understand all the ins and outs of it. But you can also learn a bit more, and hopefully that's what we will do in the coming weeks. How does this weird, apparently foolish event of the crucifixion of a guy who called himself the King of the Jews, who presented himself as the King of the Jews, how does that change me? How does that change us? And I think we need to gaze at the events of Jesus' crucifixion and think about it. I think it's the Jesuits, they have this this process of spiritual formation where you spend a long period of time, maybe a month or more, considering your own sinfulness, and then a month or more meditating on the life of Jesus, and then a month meditating on the death of Jesus, and another month meditating on the resurrection of Jesus, and it's transformative. So I want to encourage us in this Easter season to spend a month meditating on this apparently foolish, apparently powerless event of the crucifixion of Jesus. And a simple way you can do that is just once a week, 1 week for the next 4 weeks, is just take one of the gospel accounts. Don't read the whole gospel, just read the bit about Jesus' crucifixion, maybe from the triumphal entry, maybe from the time when he was in the temple. I don't mind, just pick it, or maybe even from the arrest or from the Last Supper, and just read through that. Or get the YouVersion Bible app and go to the video bit and watch the dramatizations of that in Matthew's gospel. And do that a couple of times this coming week. And then the next week, go on to Mark's gospel and do the same thing. And the next week after that, go on to Luke's gospel. And the next week after that, go on to John's gospel. And just read and meditate on that. And let yourself be puzzled by it. Let yourself be caught up in the tragedy of it and the surprising thing. Jesus comes into Jerusalem and crowds welcome him, and then a few days later they're chanting for him to be crucified. It's an unbelievably shocking turn of events. And then obviously the great reversal of Jesus' resurrection, but just spend some time thinking about it. When Paul says, I resolve to know nothing but Jesus Christ and him crucified, it's not like just an intellectual exercise, but for him it was an interactive exercise. It was something that he engaged with God about. And as we come into this Easter season, and we want to try and dig a bit more deeply and think a bit more clearly about the significance of the crucifixion of Jesus, but let's first of all engage with the reality of the crucifixion of Jesus and experience it in fresh ways. Watch the Passion of the Christ if you're up for that sort of gory level of recreation of the event or whatever, but do something. Read, meditate, look at art, watch videos, do something. Choose now, yes, I'm going to do that once or twice in this coming week, so that we can be again overwhelmed by the foolishness of God and the apparent weakness of God that actually turned out to be the power and the wisdom of God for you and for me. Just before we finish, and we invite you to join us for morning tea over in the hall, and for those of you who are in the overflow room, you have the advantage of being there. Please leave some of the food and drink for us. But some of you might think, oh, we haven't been together in a building much recently, and I'd just like someone to be able to pray with me about something that's going on in my life. And if that's you, I just invite you to come up and see me or grab someone that you trust to pray with you and just get them to pray with you about that in here or outside or somewhere that's helpful for you. Encourage you to go and say hello to Paul and Laura and Declan. It's great that we can get to meet with them, and especially meet Declan for those of us who haven't had the chance to do that yet. So that's a great thing that we get to do today. But if you need prayer, do that. I just want to finish with some reflection time. Eddie, if you can just put up those next one for us, thanks. So we've been together for the last hour or so. Just pause and reflect on our time with God. Out of our time together, our singing and our praying and our sharing and our reading, what's God prompting you to remember? And what's God nudging you to respond? It doesn't have to be like a whole, world-changing thing. Maybe it will be, but it can just be some simple thing that God's nudging you to do in response to the way he's met with you today. So just a few moments for you to reflect on that and say, God, what do you want me to remember? How do you want me to respond? And then I'll pray a blessing over us. God, we thank you that we don't have to be wise or powerful or rich or intelligent, even if we are those things, God, but we can all of us come to you and receive your grace through the death and resurrection of Jesus. We don't even need to understand it all, God, but we can draw on your life-changing benefits that you offer us through that. And I pray that this Easter season, that would be a rich experience for each one of us. And I just want to pray a blessing on us as we finish. So you might like us to be open in whichever ways you're receptive to God. And let me just pray a blessing over you. May the all-wise and all-powerful God upend your thinking and surprise you again with his apparent foolishness and apparent weakness. And may you experience in fresh ways the life-changing power of the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. May it be a firm foundation for your life, now and always. Amen.